Hello and welcome to the Bookshelf Conversation, the podcast segment of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors, artists, musicians, filmmakers, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture, because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Dan Schlossberg has written thousands of articles and a number of books on the national pastime, including a couple of my personal favorites, which he collaborated on as a co-author, Al Clark's Called Out But Safe, A Baseball Umpire's Journey, and Designated Hebrew, the Ron Bloomberg Story. Schlossberg's latest is also one of his oldest. He first released the Baseball Catalog in 1980. In 2002, it had morphed into the Baseball Almanac. And this year, it's the new Baseball Bible, notes, nuggets, lists, and legends from our national pastime. The name may have changed, but the concept is still the same. Hundreds of pages of fun facts designed to entertain and bring a smile to the face or a shake of the head. I spoke with Schlossberg recently about how the baseball publishing world has changed over the last quarter-plus century. Dan Schlossberg, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Nice to talk to you, Ron. Thanks for having me.
So congratulations on the new book, The New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from Our National Pastime. Now, this is a, what edition is this? Second, third?
Oh, it's the third different publisher, but it's more like the 12th or 13th different edition of the original baseball catalog.
Okay, now, okay, Baseball Catalog, Baseball Bible. You also published the Baseball Almanac.
Yes, they were all part of the same family. It began with the Baseball Catalog in 1980. It was a Book of the Month Club alternate that year, along with Billy Martin's number one. And then when it changed publishers in 2002, it became the Baseball Almanac. That was Triumph Books. And now it's the new Baseball Bible with Skyhorse.
Now, I hadn't planned on getting to inside baseball book publishing so early, but you say the third publisher. Why did you have to have three publishers? Usually, doesn't one publisher come up with a revised edition a few years later? I just think it's interesting from a business viewpoint.
Well, actually, the original publisher, Jonathan David Publishers, did come up with several updated editions. But after a while, I wanted to expand the book. I wanted to do other things, so I asked for a new publisher, and they released the book and went to Triumph Books, who was interested in that. And then after 15 years, they didn't want to do any more updates. And so I went to Skyhorse.
So you started this book, the first iteration of this book, you said, in 1980. Now that's well before the internet and well before you can do any kind of research online. So tell us about the process of gathering all this information for the book. How many items would you say are in a book like this?
Well, now that it's 424 pages and an oversized edition, there are probably about 10,000 trivia items in the book, and
wow,
about 1,000 illustrations.
Uh-huh. All right, so in the pre-internet, pre-digitized days, how did you go about collecting all this?
Well, I have a huge home baseball library. I don't follow any other sport, Ron, as you probably know. I don't follow football, basketball, hockey, or any other sport at all. I baseball all year round, and that helps a lot, but also doing research, going to the libraries, going to the league offices. We used to have such a thing as league offices, National League, American League. Major League Baseball was very helpful to me. The teams are helpful. And I also read a lot. I save everything, the old Sporting News, USA Today, Baseball Weekly, which is now Sports Weekly, and Sports Illustrated. All these publications I read and I save, and I put everything into the computer.
And you put things into the computer. Did you have to get permission from the various sources to use these things, or you just repurpose them for your own purposes?
In many cases, especially regarding illustrations, you do need permission. Mm-hmm. But things that are very old, and there are a lot of things in this book that are very old, the Library of Congress has a great archive, and it's public domain. It's free to use. And I put in some great old baseball pictures. I mean, pictures, you know, of a team in spring training sitting on donkeys. You know, the New York Giants sitting on donkeys in 1908, something like that. You know, just great stuff that you can find in the archive. Just do a little research on the computer.
Now, when you revise a book like this, as you say, it's gone through many iterations, do you just add on or do you have to take out because I guess the publisher wants to keep it within a reasonable amount of published pages?
Well, that's one concern, but the other concern is records change. For example, there are more players who had four home runs in a game, since the last edition of this book. There are more 300-game winners. There are more the All-Star Game scores, which I list every All-Star Game score. I mean, that's obviously changed from the previous editions. So you have to change because baseball records change. And also, the game itself has changed. I mean, the addition of the second wild card, I mean, that's a major change. Even the addition of the first wild card. So baseball has changed enormously since the baseball catalog came out in 1980.
So I think that's one of the problems you have with books like the Baseball Encyclopedia or Total Baseball, which is probably one of the reasons they have gone the way of the dodo. The information is constantly updated online, and I guess it's prohibitively expensive for publishers. I mean, these were massive books. These were, you know, hundreds, you know, bordering on thousands of pages of material. It gets too expensive to produce. You can't do it every year, but like you say, the records are always changing.
Yeah, that's very true. But in a book like this, the reason it's important and significant is the illustrations. There are cartoons and photographs in this book that have never appeared anywhere else previously, and that's what makes this book so good.
So that must have been a lot of fun trying to find those things. It's like a little scavenger hunt.
Well, I also have my own photo library. I have pictures that were taken of me with ballplayers, pictures taken by me of ballplayers. I have a picture of Tom Seaver on the cover of this book that I took at the All-Star Game in Kansas City in 1973. So that's just one example. But there's also a cartoon of Chipper Jones that's a chapter heading late in the book. That was done specifically for this book by Ronnie Joyner, a very talented baseball artist, who's a friend of mine.
Yeah, he was on a previous bookshelf conversation. He published a book composed of several scores, if not hundreds, of cartoons he made. And this used to be a staple of newspapers back in the day, as they used to say, that they would have their staff cartoonists draw up a caricature with either something that the player had done recently or over the course of his career. Those are very charming. It is kind of sad that they're not so much around anymore.
The only place you can find his work, anyway, is Sports Collector's Digest. Every issue of Sports Collector's Digest has a Ronnie Joyner cartoon in it. And it's great stuff for listeners of yours who might not know. What he does is he draws the likeness of the person, it's sort of like a charcoal sketch, and then he fills in words all about the player's career. Mm-hmm. And it's really well done.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite chapter or chapters in this book?
I think probably the chapter on nicknames, which is the language of baseball. I love that chapter because of the origin of team nicknames, famous quotations, things players say. I just love it. In fact, the cover of that cover picture in that chapter is a picture showing the Brooklyn Dodgers trolley network. Actually, the Brooklyn City of Brooklyn trolley network, because the team was originally called the Trolley Dodgers, because to get across the street, you had to dodge about 100 different trolley lines that were crisscrossing all over the place. It was not easy.
Okay, you have to explain for our younger listeners exactly what a trolley is.
Okay, it's a streetcar. It's actually a street railroad is probably the best way to explain it. There are tracks in the street, and of course, the vehicles have to stay on the tracks, and many of them were perpendicular, they crisscrossed, they were diagonal, and in Brooklyn in particular, if you look at that picture in the book, which came from the Library of Congress, it's amazing how many different lines crossed at that one intersection that's shown in the book.
Now, this is one type of book that you've published. You've published many books. Well, one thing I'll get out of the way with right now, how did you become such an ardent Braves fan?
1957, the Milwaukee Braves beat the Yankees in the World Series. All my friends rooted for the Yankees, and the Brooklyn Dodgers and New York Giants were going to California. So I figured, okay, the Braves are the best team, I'm going to stay with them.
So just to be different?
Just to be different, pretty much. I've always been that way. I was only 9 years old at the time, but that team had so many Hall of Famers. Hank Aaron, Eddie Matthews, Warren Spahn, and Lou Burdett probably should be in the Hall of Fame.
Now, so how does a book like the New Baseball Bible compare with some of the others? You've co-written several books. One of your books is The Designated Hebrew with Ron Bloomberg. Another one is called Out But Safe with umpire Al Clark. Well, describe that process, working with others.
Each of the three autobiographies that I I was a ghostwriter for, each one is different because of the personalities involved, too.
Mm-hmm.
But working with the person, you have to interview them and then take what they say on tape, transcribe the tape, and then put it in their words as if they said it, not as if you said it. So you ask the questions, you try to get them to say what you want them to say because you know their careers. But then you have to take what they say and pretend that you were that person, which is not always easy. Milo Hamilton, the great broadcaster, whose work I also was a co-author of, He was very prepared. He came with notebooks and briefcases. He knew all the stuff from his whole career, which is a long career. 60 years at Milo's Mike was the title of that book, Making Airwaves, 60 years at Milo's Mike. But Ron Bloomberg just winged it. He was just doing everything from memory, which was very difficult for me because I knew some of the stuff he was telling me was not right. For example, he told me he had 9 home runs against Nolan Ryan. And I knew that Bloomberg had 52 home runs in his career, so how could he have 9 of those be against Nolan Ryan? So I checked. He had 1 against Nolan Ryan. So
what happens in a situation like that?
I put it together the correct way, you know. He said he was able to hit Nolan Ryan very well. Well, that I could say. I could not say I hit 9 home runs against Nolan Ryan because that was inaccurate. If I know something is wrong, I won't use it.
Now, but if you know something's wrong, do you go back to Ron and say, look, Ron, you know, the record indicates blah, blah, blah?
Oh, very definitely. In fact, it's really funny. Years ago, I was in Kissimmee, Florida during spring training when the Houston Astros trained there. And that was when I was working with Milo. So I was having dinner with Milo in a restaurant, and Nolan Ryan walked in. So I went up to him and I said, do you know that Ron Bloomberg says he hit 9 home runs against you? Ryan just laughed.
Now, well, Milo Hamilton, you have a feeling that someone who works in broadcasting or the media would be a little more together as far as the notes go. I remember listening to Moose Scourin was on an episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me several years ago, and he made some claims that just sounded a little bit too Hollywood to be true. So this was shortly after Rob Nyer came out with his book on the Big Book of Baseball Myths. And with that as my inspiration, I went back to various sources and found out that, let's just say his memory was a little cloudy when it came to that particular story. But when you talk to the ball players, especially the older ones, I mean, their feats and accomplishments seem to expand as the decades go on.
In many cases, that is true. But Al Clark had a terrific memory of his run-ins with managers, for example. And he was great. He was really good to work with. He was very funny. He was articulate. He was outspoken. And at times he was almost yelling at me, remembering some of the incidents that happened to him. For example, he once threw Frank Robinson out of a game during the national anthem. So I said, Al, how did that happen? How can you throw somebody out during the national anthem? He said, I had a rule. If you had an argument one day, the next day the slate was clean. And Frank came out with the lineup card he was managing then, and he started up the argument from the day before, so I threw him out. So I said, so what happened? What happened? So Al says, well, we got reprimanded. We both got fined by the league. And I said, Al, if you had to do it over again, what would you do? And he said, I'd wait till the song ended.
All right, so a book like that you ghostwrite, you've written other books on your own. You've written about the Braves, obviously. You've written a book about 300-game winners. Do you prefer one type over another?
I love history. I love baseball history because I love the game better the way it used to be. I grew up in the 50s and 60s, as you know, Ron. And I liked it when there were 8 teams in each league and the winners went directly to the World Series. In 2014, just to give you an example, to me there was no legitimate World Series team. Both the Giants and the Royals were wild card winners. They were not championship teams. And to me, that hurt the integrity of the World Series. So I like baseball history. I like the good old days of baseball when pitchers went 9 and games were played, you know, on grass during the day for the most part. There were Sunday doubleheaders. To me, that was the good old days of baseball. And that's why I love the history books the best.
I was talking with another author who wrote a book about the Cubs following their World Series win, and he was an older gentleman also, and I asked him if he would be satisfied having had to wait so long for the Cubs to do that, if he would be happy if it was just one and done, and he said no. But you have a generation of fans who grow up not knowing any of this stuff. Do you find when you make your appearances and your talks to audiences that the younger people are interested in the history of the game?
I wish they were. In fact, I wish the ball players themselves were more interested in the history of the game. Years ago, the Dodgers hired a historian just to let their own players know who Jackie Robinson was. There are players around today who didn't know who Babe Ruth was or who Jackie Robinson was or even who Hank Aaron was. And it's unbelievable to me these guys are still so involved in their own careers and their own exploits and their own hobbies like video games that they don't know the history of the game they're playing. And the same goes for the fans. They need to know the history of the game. And that's why a book like The New Baseball Bible is so important.
You mentioned the players not knowing. I was tickled a week or so ago to find an article, an interview with Ian Kinsler, who spoke with great pride about Hank Greenberg when Kinsler came over to the Dodgers, to the Detroit Tigers. His number was the same that Greenberg had worn. And I believe his family said that he should try to find out if his Greenberg's family, which the number had been retired by the Tigers, if they would allow him to wear that number, which he had his whole career, and he wouldn't even do it.
That's really interesting because I'm positive that Hank Greenberg's number has been retired.
Has or has not?
Has.
Yes, yes. That was the point, to bring it out of retirement so he could wear it.
Oh, and they would not allow it. Okay.
Well, I don't think he even asked. I don't think he didn't want to embarrass himself by asking for something like that. But I just thought it was Hamisha, as our people say,
yes.
that he would not even go there.
And we should point out to your listeners that there is a complete list of retired numbers in the New Baseball Bible.
And we just had the Jackie Robinson Day over the weekend where every single player wore number 42 in honor of Robinson. This is the 20th year that had happened, and when Mariano Rivera retired, he had been the last player grandfathered in to wear number 42.
But no, Big Pappy.
Big Pappy?
42, yes.
Ah, I stand corrected. So, but it was interesting to hear the broadcasters complain because some of the uniforms had only numbers and no names on the back, so it was a little hard for them to identify some of the players. Are you working on anything new at this point, or are you just relaxing for a while and basking in the glory of this one?
The glory is a great word, but I'm not basking. I just found out the book is in Costco, which is terrific. I'm really enjoying that. But I'm basically making a lot of signing appearances. I'm going to be signing at the Baseball Hall of Fame on July 27th. I'm the keynote speaker for the Braves 400 Club in Atlanta on June 24th, and that's kind of a big honor. That's a huge fan club down there, and I'll be signing my Braves book when the Braves rolled the diamond in Atlanta. And the Fenway Park Writers Series in Boston on June 15th. I'll be up in Boston. So lots of things happening, and looking forward to really promoting this book.
And if our listeners want to find out more about you, is there a website they can go to?
There is. DanSchlossberg.net. It's S-C-H-L-O-S-S-B-E-R-G. DanSchlossberg.net. And if they want to contact me, the best way to do that is through Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Braves1, lowercase b, @Braves1, BRAVES1.
And we have been talking with Dan Schlossberg, author of the New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from our national pastime. Dan, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me, Ron. Always great to be on your show.
And that was the Bookshelf Conversation with Dan Schlossberg. Just to give you a heads up of some of our upcoming guests, we'll be talking with Gary Chertkowski, author of The League of Outside Baseball, an illustrated history of baseball's forgotten heroes. He's a very interesting graphic designer and also author of a magazine, 21, which will follow along the lines of The League of Outsider Baseball. We'll also be talking with Jason Turbo. His latest book is Dynastic, Bombastic, Fantastic, Reggie Raleigh Catfish and Charlie Finley Swingin' A's. That was one of the books that I included in the latest spring baseball titles for bookreporter.com, along with Marty Appel's book on Casey Stengel, Paul Dixon's book on Leo Durocher, and Tom Verducci's book on the Cubs. Just want to let you know that the day after this gets posted, Tuesday the 25th, will be the release of my new book, Hank Greenberg in 1938, Hatred and Home Runs in the Shadow of War. So I hope you'll give that a shot. I will be appearing to discuss that book at the Bergino Baseball Clubhouse on Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 o'clock. For more information, visit bergino.com. And again, if you have any questions or comments, please drop me a line at Ron Kaplan. Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf. I forgot my own address for a second. Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf @gmail.com. And for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews, visit Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf.com. That's my signal that I've talked too long. And I'm going to say goodbye now. Talk to you soon, everybody.